Today on Maine Calling, remembering and honoring veterans in our lives. At this moment, people all over Maine are paying tribute to those who have served the nation in the armed forces. In Portland, South Portland, Brewer Bangor, Biddeford Saco, and Waterville, parades are underway. People in other communities have gathered in the center of town to lay a wreath, hear taps being played, and raise the flag. There are road races, dinners, and other events to raise money for veterans organizations. I'm Jennifer Rooks. Here at Maine Calling, we dedicate this program to hearing the stories of veterans who matter to you. Whether it's a parent, grandparent, friend, or neighbor, we invite you to tell us about them and what you've learned from them. Maine Calling is just ahead.
Maine Calling On Demand is made possible by Welsh & Forbes, working with clients to manage the full range of events that come with building wealth, from investments to trustee services. More at welshforbes.com. And by Maine Seacoast Mission, strengthening Maine's coastal and island communities through education, health, and support. Learn more at seacoastmission.org.
I'm Jennifer Rooks, and this is Maine Calling. It is Veterans Day, and we take this opportunity to pay tribute to our nation's veterans by dedicating this show to their stories. We invite you to share remembrances and anecdotes about yourself, a friend, or family member who has served in the military. Call with your story, 1-800-399-3566. Send an email to talk@mainepublic.org. Post a comment on Twitter, Facebook, or Instagram. And again, the phone number. Call and share the story of the person you want to remember today. 1-800-399-3566. We're joined for the hour with Ashley Mitchell, who is with the Our Heroes Military Museum in Lincoln, and Judith Skillings, the Maine director of Stories Behind the Stars. And we're going to learn a lot about those organizations as well. Ashley and Judith, thank you so much for joining me today. Ashley, and I really appreciate the fact that you are calling us today or joining us by Zoom on what is your biggest day. Tell us about what is going on in Lincoln, Maine right now.
Yes. So today, right here in Lincoln, we are opening the Our Heroes Military Museum. Today's our grand opening. We have full displays here. We have a full working library. We can actually check out books and have people come help you with your research. And it's been a huge community effort. Everything here has been donated down to our floors. Even people paid for our floors and our paint. And it's been a wonderful community effort. It's just the definition of being a Mainer.
Ashley, where did the idea come from to have a military museum in Lincoln? When did that, how did it start, and how did it all happen?
It all started, our president and vice president of the board, Brian Hamer and Bob Richford, they were having coffee one day, and one of them just brought up the idea of having a military museum. And then over about 1 or 2 years, they had a calling for people to be on the board. And I saw the calling from House in the Woods, which is right in Lee. And I said, I want to do something like that. And that's how I met all of them. And that's how we all found each other. And then the board got together this spring and we made it happen just in time for Veterans Day.
And it is your grand opening today. Events all day long.
Yes, all day till 5 o'clock. So everyone has time to get here.
No matter how far away you live. Judith, I want to turn to you. You are the Maine director of Stories Behind the Stars. What is Stories Behind the Stars?
Hi, Jen. Stories Behind the Stars is a all-volunteer initiative to try to write short obituary-style biographies of all 421,000 Americans who died during World War II. We're hoping to do this by September 2nd of 2025.
Wow. And you have signed on as Maine director. What has that been like for you? When did you sign on and what has that been like for you?
Well, I just joined the project in July of this year. And I found that the stories were truly addictive and I was really getting into it. And I realized that there was no director for the state of Maine. And I was born in Maine, raised there, and I still have a summer home there, but I had the misfortune of marrying a man from Pennsylvania. So I feel that I am a Mainer and I wanted to represent the state and get them done. There are about 3,580 fallen from Maine.
So you are going to write 3,580?
No. With any luck, Jen, I'm going to have volunteers to help me write them.
Well, we will definitely try to help you with that, Judith, and we'll put information about ways to contact you on our webpage and Facebook page. So if someone's listening and they want to help you write these, tell us about some of the stories that you've written so far. So you said they're addictive. Tell us about one or two of the people that you particularly would like people to know about.
There are just so many because each story is unique. But I was put on to a fellow from the island where I summer in Georgetown, Maine, who was a pilot. He flew 13 missions across France into Germany before his plane was shot down. When it was hit, they saw 9 parachutes, but there was a 10-man crew. And there was a lot of controversy as to whether he got out or not. Well, he did. He landed and was behind the lines in France, working with the resistance fighters. They tried to get him out through Spain, but that route was closed. So he ended up fighting for the French until he was killed. And he was like 19 years old. But those stories are just, they're just wonderful.
Recently, one of the local papers ran a story about stories behind our stores, stars. What happened afterwards?
Oh, well, I have about a dozen volunteers as a result of that. I got to meet you, which was really wonderful. Plus, there is a group of senior education seminars in Maine, at the kind of colleges, that have asked Kate and me to go up and speak and encourage people to write these stories.
Wow. Ashley, I want to turn back to you. Is Lincoln, Maine a place that has had a disproportionately large number of people serve in the military over the years?
Yes, we are. We have a very large military population, veterans population. We're also home to Maine's Medal of Honor recipient, Master Sergeant Gary Gordon, of which we just completed his memorial statue last summer. So we have a very proud and patriotic town.
And people are hearing some things in the background, and that is because you are actually at the museum right now, and people who have come for the grand opening are standing around you. So just to put some context into some of the noises people might be hearing. I know that you're walking around on your phone trying to find quiet places to talk. Tell us, Ashley, tell us about Gary Gordon for people who haven't heard his story.
Master Sergeant Gary Gordon, if anyone's familiar with the movie Black Hawk Down, he was in the helicopter. He assisted, Michael Durant in the helicopter when the plane crashed. He had asked numerous times to go down and was told no. And then finally, when he was given the okay to go down and help his fallen comrade, the quote was, you know, you're going into death. You might not make it out. And him and his fellow soldiers said, well, that's fine. Shughart was also with him. And they went down. And because of him, you know, it is said that Michael Durant got out. He was actually joined us last summer when Gordon's statue was revealed.
No. Oh,
and
Ashley.
It's an amazing, courageous story. I would really recommend the true story of Black Hawk Down to really get a feel for it.
Well, Ashley, that's really quite something. Judith, I'm wondering, do you or your family have a personal connection to World War II, or is it a love of history that made you interested in becoming the main director of Stories Behind the Stars?
It's probably mostly a love of history and genealogy and doing research, but my father and uncle both served in the war. Fortunately, they both came home, which is great. So, and I met my husband in Maine. He was military. He was retired as a commander in the Navy. So I've always been around military involvement, but I really do just love doing research and history, genealogy, and I love bringing these young men to life so that they're more than a military campaign. You know, they had family, and one of my favorite ones is this Marine who went off to be quite a hero. His favorite sport in high school was tiddlywinks. Yeah, I know. Great.
So today is, of course, Veterans Day. What do you think about? What did you think about when you woke up this morning? And what are you hoping others think about on what for some people is just a day off work?
Yeah, I think that's part of what Stories Behind the Stars is hoping to achieve, is to make this day and every day make people more aware of the sacrifices that the young people of this country and of every country gave during that war. Because, you know, as they say, if you don't remember history, you're doomed to repeat it. And we certainly don't want to repeat it. And these were very real people who were willing to go off and fight for this country. And that's a great thing. It should not be forgotten.
Ashley, I'm looking at you and guessing that you're Gen Z or Gen X. You're quite a bit younger than many of the historians that have appeared on Maine Calling over the past few years. And I'm wondering how you got so interested in the stories of Maine veterans and what, as a representative of your generation, you would like people to be thinking about today.
I would say it all really has started. I homeschool my children, just a fun fact. And it's really started through teaching them all the things that I missed when I was in school. There's only so many hours a day to cram everything in. And I missed a lot and don't want my kids to miss the same things. So my interest in history started there. My involvement with the military community, I can owe to my grandparents, my uncles, all of my family who have served, that I'm lucky enough to have my grandparents, my children's great-grandparents around to tell me stories and keep my interest alive. And so I'm able to pass that on to the youth here.
Tell us about some of the most interesting things people will find if they go to your brand new Our Heroes Military Museum in Lincoln.
You never know what you will find in the nooks and crannies. We are packed full. We have interesting pins from when U.S. soldiers actually served with the Chinese Army as pilots. We have pins from local veterans, from all their Korea service medals, World War II service medals. We have a huge collection of books ranging from the Revolutionary War to Marines on road trips with their dogs to even records where you can hear the songs of the Civil War or the Green Berets. We have a little bit of everything, and it's all local.
Judith, why don't you share another story with us, something else that you have, another young man or young woman story that you'd like to share?
You know, I have yet to have a young woman. I'm waiting for my first one. But we were temporarily taken off Maine to do Section 18 at Arlington National Cemetery because they're trying to get that done by the end of the year. And in it, I was researching a young man who killed in a plane crash near Dahlgren, Virginia. And on board was a young man from Mexico, Maine. So I decided I might as well write him up at the same time, and only to discover that there was no information on him. He was not in any of the roles, any of the rosters. But I did come across the 1944 yearbook for Mexico, Maine, which was dedicated to him and to two other young men who were victims fallen during the war. So I was able to write all of those stories. And if anybody out there is from Mexico, Maine, I would love to get these stories to the library or to somewhere so they can see what happened to these boys, you know, 75 years later. I mean, that they finally have a biography.
These biographies, Judith, the Stories Behind the Stars, can people read mm-hmm. them now, or are you going to reveal them all at the same time?
No, they can be read now if you go on to a website called Fold 3, which is a military website, a branch of Ancestry.com. And you put in their names under the honor rolls and memorials, and they will come up. Eventually, they will be available via an app, which I believe will be sponsored by Find a Grave, which you can put on any cell phone. And you can go to any cemetery or memorial anywhere in the world that Americans are buried hold it up, scan, and you will get the story of that person.
Hmm. We are talking about veterans. We were hoping that you will share your stories of veterans who have meant a great deal to you, what you've learned from them. Give us a call at 1-800-399-3566. Send an email to talk@mainepublic.org. Post a comment on Twitter, Facebook, or Instagram. And again, the phone number, 1-800-399-3566. Ashley, you mentioned that so many members of your family have served. I'm wondering if you want to share with us a lesson or a saying or something that you have learned from an uncle or a grandfather or somebody that you now share with your kids and others.
The greatest lesson probably any of them have taught me is the actual definition of it's not what your country can do for you, it's what you can do for your country. And they've always taught us that you have to be involved in your community, you have to care about those around you, you have to always want to give a hand. And it's just, they've always said, if you're not going to do it, who will? And I hope I've instilled that in my kids and the people around me. If you're not going to do it, well, then who will? And that's the best lesson they could have given me. And it made this happen. So it made the museum happen.
And what about you, Judith? As you read these stories, do you have something that maybe has made you think differently, or have you learned something that's, you know, maybe not a saying or maybe not a bit of advice, but a way of thinking that you didn't before?
Yeah. A friend of mine she's from Germany, and she was curious about if this was making me feel more nationalistic. And I realized it's quite the opposite. I am feeling that no matter what side they fought on, all these young people were doing what they felt was best, and that they should be honored for that. And that, you know, it was just, I surprised myself that I choke up over every single story, and I'm not an emotional person. But these, I don't know, they just were cut down so young, but they were doing something that they believed in. And right now, I love this project. I believe in it wholeheartedly, and I'm going to keep busy with it for the next 3 years.
Well, we are talking about veterans on Veterans Day. We welcome you to call and share stories. We're going to take a quick break. This is Maine Calling. We'll be right back. Welcome back. This is Jennifer Brooks, and this is Maine Calling. We are talking about the veterans in our lives, and we invite you to share your stories. Our guest today, Ashley Mitchell, with the Our Heroes Military Museum, opening today in Lincoln, and Judith Skillens with the Stories Behind the Stars Project. Share your comments and questions by email, a brief email, please, talk@mainepublic.org. You can find us on social media or give us a call at 1-800-399-3566. On the line with us now is Dr. Megan Ingvoldstad. She is with the Defense POW MIA Accounting Agency's Central Identification Lab and is a forensic anthropologist. Dr. Ingvoldstad, what an interesting job. Thanks so much for calling in.
Well, thank you so much for having me and for talking about the story we're going to talk about today.
That's right. So you played a large part in helping to identify a young man who was from Maine who was lost in World War II. Tell us what you can about this story.
Sure. So the service member we're going to be talking a little bit about today is Sergeant Zelwood Gradlin. And to talk about his story, we really have to talk about a military operation called Operation Tidal Wave. And this is a operation that happened on 1 August 1943 and was composed of 177 B-24 Liberators who all left Benghazi, traveled 7 or 8 hours to Ploiești, Romania. And the reason that they were doing that is because there was a ring of oil refineries that were really fueling the World War II effort in Europe. So the thinking at the time was that if we could take out those oil refineries, we could effectively end World War II. So we have all these bombers. They arrived there, but unfortunately, Ploiești ends up being very, very heavily defended. So we end up having 310 Americans killed. 55 of those 177 bombers were damaged in crash, all within same location on the same day, many of which within the same 30 minutes. You can imagine what a horrific event that this would have been. Yeah, go ahead.
Oh, no, I was just saying, yes, I can't imagine.
Right. So it really falls to the citizens of Romania to try and bury the dead from this horrible event. And they do the very best that they can, and they try to keep air crews together. And so there are some records from the time. And what happens is that fast forward, end of the war, we have American Graves Registration Command individuals coming through, and they identify as many of these unaccounted for American service members as they can. And they are very successful. They identify hundreds. But when they're done, there are 80 Americans that are still left that are unidentified and unaccounted for. And that's just because it's just not like good enough evidence to make a specific ID. So those remains end up being buried in American military cemeteries in Belgium. And that's where they stay as unknowns until 2017, when DPAA gets all the necessary permits and permissions that we can to try and identify these remains and see if we can identify any of those 80 Americans that are still unaccounted for. So Sergeant Gravlin was one of those individuals that was not identified following the war, and we were very hopeful that his remains might be among those unknowns.
How were you able to identify Sergeant Gravlin almost 80 years later?
Yeah, so we ended up receiving all of those caskets into our laboratory. And in his particular case, we have multiple types of evidence that came together to make a strong identification. So first we have the historical information I was just telling you about, that these specific caskets would be those individuals that were unaccounted for Operation Tidal Wave. Then beyond that, we had dental information in his case that was a strong case for being the dentition specifically of Sergeant Gravlin. We had multiple anthropological analyses conducted that showed that the biological profile of a certain set of remains matched that of Sergeant Gravlin. And then in this case also, we were very fortunate to have family reference DNA samples from multiple members of his family that were consistent with a certain set of remains. And so all of those different types of information together came together to make a strong ID for Sergeant Gravlin.
Dr. Ingvoldstad, I understand that Sergeant Gravlin will finally be buried tomorrow in Phillips, Maine. I just want to ask you personally what it means to you to be able to return him and to return others to their families and to their hometowns.
I think that whenever we are able to make an identification, it means so much to so many different people. I think Sergeant Gravlin himself obviously deserves to be identified. His family deserves to be reunited with his remains. For myself and then the team that I work with, all of the analysts who have done the work, some people maybe don't realize that when we're working, we work completely in the blind. And that is to try and maintain the objectivity of all of our analyses so that we're not biased. Really, only once the identification is approved and the family is notified are we unblinded and able to put a name and a face with the remains that we've been working on for so many years. So it's incredibly fulfilling to be able to take a step back and think about the individual and their life that we've been working on and do that for them and for their family. And then finally, I would say that we all think that this work is very important for our current military forces to let them know that in this case, even after 80 years, we leave no one behind.
Well, thank you so much for calling in. Dr. Megan Ingvoldstad, a forensic anthropologist with the Defense POW/MIA Accounting Agency's Central Identification Laboratory. And Judith, now Sergeant Gravlin's story is one of your stories, correct?
Correct. Because you had alerted us, Jen, to this, Kate went online and has created the biography of this young man, talking about where he was born, what his siblings were, how many there were, where his mother and father had married. When he enlisted, he worked in the local mills before he enlisted. He was hired at a clock and watchmaking company known as I. Ingraham, and then he worked in Bristol before he went into the military. And there's many, many more details, plus his military service. But because of this, we felt it was important to put his memorial on. So it has now been posted to Fold 3 in time for his burial.
Wonderful. Well, thank you so much for that. We're going to go to David calling from Bucksport. Hi, David. Go ahead.
Good morning. I'm so happy to be able to make this call to honor my dad. He was born in 1921. Graduated high school in Leavenworth, Kansas in 1939. He had met his sweetheart that became his bride, but they met in the eighth grade in Leavenworth. So Dad's sitting in his sophomore English class at Northwest Missouri State in Maryville, Missouri, and a uniformed officer knocked at the door in the classroom and walked in, and they said, "We're looking for Larry Wieda." My dad had taken flight lessons and learned to fly before he started college. So they said, "You are going to be reporting next week." I don't remember which airfield they sent him to for his reporting, but he became a flight instructor. And he never left the homeland, but he taught many, many pilots to fly at airfields all around the country. One of his favorite stories to tell was when he had a class of Chinese pilots that were learning to fly U.S. bomber planes. And they had worked out an elaborate sort of sign language that they were using, because my dad didn't speak Mandarin and those guys didn't speak English. And he would say, you know, they were really quick studies and had great rapport as they were doing the classroom work. He said, then we'd go up in the planes for our first, test flights. And he said, all of the sign language that we had learned so well went right out the window at the first sense of any kind of a dangerous situation or an emergency issue that was coming up. He'd say, then you would hear everybody was screaming in Mandarin and English as we tried to solve the problem. But he loved telling the story about teaching Chinese pilots to fly U.S. planes in the war. And then after the war ended, the first question they asked all of the pilots was, are you ready to start a career as a commercial airline pilot? There's this new company called Transworld Airlines that's setting up a commercial flying industry. And my dad said, no, I want to go back home to Leavenworth, Kansas, and form a family and live in the town that I was born and raised in. So I love that story about my dad being a pilot and a flight instructor in World War II.
Well, David, thank you so much for calling in and sharing your story. We hope so many others will. 1-800-399-3566. We'll go to Tom, who's calling from Vienna. Hi, Tom. Go ahead.
Hey, hello. Yeah, I wanted to call in and talk about a group of young men. They were all men in this case, who fought in World War II. And ultimately didn't get any recognition from the U.S. government. These were kids, 19-year-old kids, who were too weak, bad eyesight, too frail, could not get into any of the U.S. services. But they volunteered to fight as ambulance drivers for American Field Service. Now, we know American Field Service for the student exchange programs, but in World War II and in World War I before it, they were ambulance drivers. Now, as you know, ambulance drivers were not needed behind the lines. They were on the front lines of World War II. My dad was in North Africa. Then he was in Italy at the Battle of Monte Cassino. Then he was actually at the liberation of the Bergen-Belsen concentration camp 1 month after Anne Frank died there. Anyway, I was fortunate enough to be able to attend the 50th anniversary reunion of all these men. There were 24 of them from every New England state, and I heard amazing stories, and they all went on and had fabulous, fabulous lives. But not one of them got a single GI benefit, The only thing they got was a letter from of appreciation from King George. But I just always like to tell the story because there are the Women's Air Ferrying Command is another group, women volunteers, who don't get recognition. And so while not taking anything away from the tremendous sacrifices and service of the enlisted, there are large groups of people who are really forgotten in the system.
Tom, thank you so much for calling and letting us know, giving us a little history lesson. Judith, did you know about the AFS ambulance drivers?
No, I did not. I hope that if any of them did give their lives for it, that we find them and we're able to tell their story through an individual, because that would be a wonderful thing that we could do for them.
Thank you, Tom. An email here from John. The wars in Europe and other places around the world cause us to reflect on not only the bravery of men and women who put themselves in harm's way, but also the lifelong trauma that usually accompanies those who have served. My own father, Warren Bernard, enlisted at 18 and became a tech sergeant and radio operator on a B-17 flying 19 missions out of Italy in 1944 and 45. He didn't talk about his war experiences ever until he was in his late 60s, when he reconnected with his old comrades with a fervor. A dear friend's father, Kenneth Bowden Sr., who was taken POW in the Battle of the Bulge, whose new wife had no word for months and months, also could not talk about the war and never did before he died. Supporting all veterans and the trauma they live with is such an important thing. Ashley, I see you nodding. I mean, this is an experience so many people who have loved ones who have served share. Noticing that someone has changed, yet not speaking about the reason.
That's something that really hits close to home with family members who have served. My own grandfather was in World War II, and everything I've learned about him as a paratrooper in World War II, I've had to learn by doing all the research myself. He was a golden unicorn. He never, ever spoke about his service in World War II. And I can say the same exact thing about my uncle, who I see almost every day. He was in Vietnam and never, ever speaks about his service. He has no interest in speaking about the things he went through. And I think that just shows a testament of how lucky we are, people like me are, who haven't served directly and haven't had to go through some of the things that they do. And I think that's a testament to what House in the Woods is doing. They're doing amazing things, bringing veterans together with other veterans and just hanging out or speaking about their service or just giving them a brother and sisterhood that they need that some of us just can't understand.
What is your story? What story would you like to share? Our phone number, 1-800-399-3566. Our email address, talk@mainpublic.org, or you can find us on social media. We'll be right back. Welcome back. I'm Jennifer Rooks. You're listening to Maine Calling. Today on the show, our tribute to veterans, a chance to tell a story or share a memory of a veteran you know or want to recognize. With me, Judith Skillings, with the project called Stories Behind the Stars, and Ashley Mitchell with the Our Heroes Military Museum. You can join our conversation, and please, we'd love to hear your story. 1-800-399-3566. Send a brief email to talk@mainpublic.org, tweet at Maine Calling, or find us on Facebook or Instagram. I'm going to read a couple emails here. This one is from former State Representative Chris Greeley. Chris writes, "This is such an important day. I've often told my 19-year-old son, Cole Greeley, who intends on joining the Marine Corps, that it doesn't matter whether a person was or is a Navy SEAL or a member of the Coast Guard Reserve. They've served our country, and we should honor them." And then from Val, "My father joined the Army in 1939 and served 2 years in Alaska, lived in a tent, but then was shipped to New Guinea and later to the Philippines, and then was part of the occupation until 1946. He was in many battles. My father was a hero in World War II, but he was a lifelong hero who grew from a childhood on the streets of New York City and orphanages to becoming the greatest man, father, and grandfather ever. He told the hard times of his life as an adventure story, never as a tragedy. He personified resilience." Thank you, Val. And if you aren't a writer, you might consider a new career. That was beautiful. We'll go to Bill from Peaks Island. Hi, Bill. Go ahead.
Hi. Thank you for having me on, and happy Veterans Day to all the veterans that are listening. I wish to talk about the way Vietnam veterans are treated in society. The vile things that have been said to me and other vets, some of the words I just can't repeat on the radio. But I'll give one instance. The church here on Peaks Island, the Brackett Memorial Church, inside the church, I have been called ignorant, immoral, stupid, and trash because I'm a Vietnam veteran. When I went to the then minister and lay leader, and this is a open arms, all means all, reconciling church, I was told by the lay leader that the open arms, all means all, reconciling ministry did not apply to Vietnam veterans.
Oh, my gosh.
So I perhaps your guests will talk about that. Now, I'm a storyteller, and I have many, many stories about Vietnam. But, boy, when you go out to an open mic and you stand up and tell a story about service in Vietnam, and I'm a combat veteran, the responses can be very mixed. I've been screamed at and abused so badly that my wife and I had to leave the side door cafe, open mic, up in Brunswick. And I'll give you one more little thing. After down in Cambridge, I was doing an open mic and told the story about Vietnam Valentine. And I had a woman come up to me afterward and say, "Why do you Vietnam veterans hate Jane Fonda?" I wished I could have helped her, but I couldn't because my husband had a security clearance and he worked at the Watertown Arsenal. And we were afraid if she did anything, he'd be fired from his job making weapons. So there you go. Perhaps you can speak to why Vietnam veterans are treated the way they're treated. So thank you for taking my call.
Bill, I'm so sorry to hear that you're still going through that today. Mm-hmm. Ashley Mitchell, why don't you talk about how your museum is showcasing Vietnam veterans, the stories that you have heard there?
I just want to start first off, our president, the one who has made this museum possible, Brian Hamer, is a Vietnam veteran. And he did a wonderful talk with the children when we brought them in when we were first in construction opening. We wanted to give the scouts a chance to look at what we were doing. And he said sometimes, you know, he was treated poorly coming back. And he said, you just do what the government tells you. And sometimes you don't know until after what happened. And he's very proud of his service. But when he does speak about it, when he does, he tears up every single time. And I just wanted to say that sometimes it's easy to watch and have an opinion about everything, but sometimes we just don't know what someone went through over there. And always to be respectful. And one thing he even said in a speech this morning, when you're speaking with a veteran, never ask if they killed anybody. That's just something no veteran wants to be asked, and it's a hard subject. And sometimes you don't know, and maybe you do know and you don't want to talk about it. But as far as, we have a whole display on Vietnam veterans, all local. We have uniforms, stories. We have a local uniform of a veteran who was the first campaign that went to Vietnam. And we have a lot of Vietnam veterans who come and speak with students and with each other on Wednesdays and Mondays. And we're trying to give a whole new perspective on how to respect and listen to the stories of our Vietnam veterans.
Bill, thank you for your call. We're going to go to James calling from Aetna. Hi, James. Go ahead.
Hello, Jennifer. Can you hear me?
I can.
Okay, great. I just wanted to call in. I'm a Vietnam veteran and a lifelong member of the VFW. I was wondering, one of your guests mentioned that one of our soldiers is coming back from Europe after 80 years. And I think she said in the town of Philip, I'm not sure. Can you tell me where or when that will be? Because we got some guys here that would like to come there and welcome
them. Sure. Yeah, I can tell you. I'm going to read to you right here from the Bangor Daily News obituary. Funeral services with full military honors will be held Saturday, November 12th, tomorrow, at 11 a.m. at the Phillips Area Community Center, 21 Depot Street, Phillips, Maine. Following the service, Sergeant Gravlin will be laid to rest beside his mother, Ida, at the Mile Square Cemetery, and a reception to follow at the PACC, the Phillips Area Community Center. So 11 a.m. at the Phillips Area Community Center. Thank you, James. We'll go to Jane calling from Belgrade. Hi, Jane. Go ahead.
Hi. Yes, I'm calling because of my dad. He was in World War II. He enlisted when he was 17 years old, so his mother had to sign for him. And he was on the USS Bunker Hill, which was hit three or four times by kamikazes. And he lost a lot of friends. And for many years after, he didn't do much about it. But then he started going to reunions all over the country for the USS Bunker Hill. And I was very lucky to go with him once. And it was just a wonderful place to be, to meet all those men that he'd been with. And he actually met a guy, and he said, "My goodness, I thought you were dead. I thought you died during such and such kamikaze." So it was just really great to be with all of them and see their camaraderie and how much they still cared for each other. So, and he's passed now, but very proud of him.
Jane, so wonderful you were able to have that experience and go with him to that reunion. Thank you so much for calling in. A tweet here from Amy. Amy writes, "I spent time in the woods to honor my grandfather. He was wounded in Operation Market Garden during World War II. He came back to the quiet of his Maine woods and was so grateful to be there, as he said there were times he wasn't sure if he'd ever hear the quiet of the trees again." So a way to pay tribute in a very small and personal way. We'll go to Roger calling from Orland. Hi, Roger. Go ahead.
I appreciate you doing this show. I was drafted, went to Vietnam in 1969, and about 9 months in, got shot in the rear end.
Ouch.
And yeah, I was lucky. And everybody told me I was going home. And as soon as I got out of the hospital, I didn't realize the sergeant that came in to see me was a re-recruitment officer. And he said, "We're sending you back to Vietnam." And I said, "You know, I've been shot. I'm going home." And he said, "No, you're going back." And so I said, "There's no way I'm going back." And he said, "Well, you'll probably get a, you know, dishonorable discharge and go to jail." And so he said, "If you sign up for 2 more years, we can guarantee you won't have to go back." And I said, "I hate the Army, and I'm not going back." And he said, "Well, if you sign up for 1 more year, we'll promote you to a corporal, send you home for 30 days, paid vacation, and give you an airplane ticket." So I signed up for 1 more year. They sent me home, and I got to help my father Hayen. And they sent me back to Vietnam, surprisingly, and I got shot again, this time in the heel. But I made it home okay, and I'm just thinking about all the fellows that did not today, and appreciate the show.
Roger, thank you so much for calling. An email here from Julie. "Today is our first Veterans Day with an actual veteran in our family. Our daughter Catherine completed her 5-year commitment to the Navy back in January. 1 week later, she began her 100% free education at the Boston Architectural College using her GI Bill. During the time she was away at boot camp in Illinois, Master at Arms School in Texas, at checkpoints on the Bangor base in Washington State, and patrolling the harbor at Suda Bay, Crete, all between the ages of 19 and 24, we were in awe of her resilience, flexibility, and professionalism. We missed her terribly, but we are all the better for it, and we are so thankful." So many times, Judith, what is coming up is the very young age of the people we're talking about.
Yes, it was not uncommon for 17-year-olds, especially after Pearl Harbor, to rush and want to sign up. And a lot of families would have 6, 7, 8 kids. They were coming down from northern Canada into Maine and as far as Waterville to find work. And if one of their sons wanted to enlist, they were proud to fight for their new country. And we find that over and over and over again, where, as you said, 17, 18 years old. Unfortunately, by 20, a lot of them didn't come home.
We're going to go to Maggie calling from New Hampshire. Hi, Maggie. Go ahead.
Hi. Thank you. My father was served in World War II in the Army Corps of Engineers. He actually went to MIT, a German immigrant son, met my mother there, enlisted Army Corps of Engineers, I may have said that, and then served in England, France, and the South Pacific. But what's really special is what he did was he would send my mother these little postcard-sized watercolors of the countryside, and he didn't usually put the destruction in. A few of them are cathedrals that had been bombed. But so we have, they're both passed away, my parents, but we have two albums totaling about 118 little paintings.
Wow.
That he did of during his time in like I said, Europe and the South Pacific. Then he came back and decided he didn't want to be an architect and went to medical school. So, wow. A pretty special story, I think.
That is really something. And isn't it wonderful that you still have them? Maggie, thank you so much.
Yes.
For calling
yes.
in.
Oh, you're welcome. Thank you. You're welcome. Bye-bye now.
Thank you. Ashley Mitchell, here we are on Veterans Day. Tell us what the scene is there at your brand new Our Heroes Military Museum. Have you had a pretty good turnout?
We are packed. The line's out the door just to sign the guest book.
Nice.
We passed out numerous Desert Storm trading cards to the kids. We've ran out of one of our veterans is a Black Horse 111 ACR veteran, and we ran out of patches to pass out. We have live music and a crowd, and I'm hiding in the supply closet for a little bit of quiet. It's just amazing. The community pulled this museum together, and they're all just right here celebrating with us.
What are your hours going to be after opening day?
We are going to be open 1 to 5 on Sundays, and then Monday, Wednesday, and Friday, we will be open 10 to 2.
All right. And Judith, let me turn to you. If somebody wants to share a story, if there's a main story behind the stars, somebody who was lost in World War II that you would like to see their story written as part of this giant project, what should that person do?
Well, I would love to have that person volunteer to become a writer or a researcher for Stories Behind the Stars. It's simple. You go onto the website, storiesbehindthestars.org, and they'll tell you a little bit about the organization. You fill out a form that says, I would like to do this, and give them your name and an email address. There is a boot camp online where you can learn the sort of the nuts and bolts of how to do it. Not bad. There's, very short articles. And when you're ready, they assign you a bomber pilot. The reason you get a bomber pilot is that there are usually 10 in the crew. And when the plane went down, they all died. So they have someone write the story of one of the people on that crew. So you have a gauge, you have a guide to see, okay, they found out these missing crew reports. Where do I find those? And that kind of thing. And after that, you're hooked. If you want to write for the state of Maine, you'll get to deal with me, and I'll be happy to give you names and walk you through the process.
How many names do you have right now that need bios written?
Well, we have about 3,580 that need to be, and we've probably done about 90 or 100 of them.
Oh, so you've done the tip of the iceberg.
Right, yes. But as I said, because of the article in the paper a couple of weeks ago, we've got 10 or 12 more volunteers who are going through the training right now and will be joining us. So hopefully this is going to pick up.
All right. Well, I really appreciate both of you joining us today on Veterans Day. We'll put some more information about both your museum, Ashley, and Stories Behind the Star, Judith, on our Facebook page and on our website. Thank you to everybody who called in and shared a story as well, some very moving stories. Our guests today were Ashley Mitchell with the Our Heroes Military Museum, opening today in Lincoln, and Judith Skillings, Main Director of Stories Behind the Stars. Today's sound engineer, Keiji Akimeladun. Our theme music was composed by Mike Jandrow. Maine Calling is produced by Jonathan Smith and Cindy Hahn. You can visit mainecalling.org for our audio archive. Mainecalling.org is also the place to subscribe to our weekly newsletter. I'm Jennifer Rooks, and you have been listening to Maine Calling on Maine Public Radio.